they are going to become more brutal.
Couldn't cut, any cut again.
Because all the hippies are trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Hey, Cudahy to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunjahade. My name is Distant Thunder, and my taxpayer name is Robert Pilot, and I'm here with Wendy Pilot and Ogama, and today our guest is going to be Robert Lilligren, because why, Wendy? It's Thursday.
It's Thursday, and Robert Lilligren is the director of the Native American Community Development Institute, and it's short for NADCI.
Did you steal that from me?
No, it was my own paper.
Okay, awesome. Shoot, I was looking all over for that. No, and then Robert's great, and we'll be talking about national and local, what's happening in the Native scene here. And, you know, we talk about Native issues, and Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues, Wendy. And we're really stoked because we're now in Chicago, so we're in Madison. Mm-hmm. We play on KFAI, and next the world.
Next is the world. And this portion of the show is brought to you by the Twin Cities American Indian COVID-19 Hotline. Call them at 651-304-9986, Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. with your COVID-19 questions.
Wow. Yeah, let's call them. Hey, with let's go to Ogama with the news, because I know there's always some news happening. Welcome, Ogama.
Hi, Anim Buju, everybody. I'm Ogama Ganuakwe. I have some news here for everybody, and I know that we usually do Native news, but this is more kind of Native-centered news. So Minnesota waters are really in need of protection. So you need to make a comment on this new case with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. So today, February 4th, there is an option to tune in to learn about the new proposed rules and to testify. It goes until 8:30 p.m. tonight. It's a public hearing. Basically, the Minnesota Water Pollution Control Agency, or the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, has proposed rules to remove numeric water quality standards and deregulate salts and ionic pollution. The proposed revisions are rules to water quality standards. Water quality standards are obviously foundational tools to protect water quality. They consist of beneficial uses, which identify how people and aquatic communities and wildlife use waters, and then they link to numeric or narrative standards. So numeric standards are set amounts to specify a pollutants allowed in a body of water that still protects it for beneficial use, while narrative standards are statements of conditions in and on the water that must be either maintained or avoided in order to protect the beneficial use. So this deregulation that they're doing of these salts and ionic pollution is coming from the narrative standard. So there will be public comment coming in after this event tonight that goes until 8:30 p.m. or until everybody has spoken. The closing of the public comment period is going to be February 24th at 4:30 p.m. I did put a link up to that on the Native Roots Radio Facebook page, and I will put another link in the comments. So basically what you're going to want to do is submit a written comment to the administrative law judge via the Office of Administrative Hearings Rulemaking e-comments website, and that website is what's linked. The discussion is number 37102, Notice of Hearing for Proposed Amendments to Rules Governing Water Quality Standards in Minnesota. These chemicals that they're talking about deregulating are the signature pollutants of the mining industry. So right now there's a whole bunch of mining companies up there that are already operating on expired permits, and the MPCA is now hoping to basically... I mean, these rules are basically a gift to mining and other polluting industries. So if you care about the water and you're looking for something that you can do from home, that is a really quick and easy way that you can get your voice heard. So then from there, I'm going to go into the Stop Line 3 stuff. We always touch base on the Stop Line 3 actions that are that are happening. So this morning, there were 8 water protectors that did a blockade at a Line 3 fueling station. They were from GNU Collective. They released a press release this morning about it. So the 8 water protectors locked to one another with barrels of concrete, and they also had a piano blockading an Enbridge fueling station and work site, and there were more people that held more space. I don't know if any of you saw the live videos. I know, Robert, you were mentioning that you hadn't seen that one video yet about it, and it's pretty good. They had somebody sitting there on the piano playing. And they were located near the proposed crossing of Line 3 through the Shell River. And it's the same site that Congresswoman Ilhan Omar visited at the Mississippi headwaters, near the Mississippi headwaters. So
the real headwaters, I heard. So I always think of Wendy and Ogama. You can't tune a fish, but you can tune a piano or something like that. Isn't that how that goes? No.
I don't know if I know that one, but I think that fits that's here.
Yeah. Okay, sorry, Ogama.
That's okay. And then there's a couple of upcoming events here. So tomorrow there's a film screening to fight fossil fuels. It's going to be the film Necessity, Oil, Water, and Climate Resistance. It's available starting at 7 a.m. and will be available for you to watch at your leisure through February 19th. This is a fundraising event. So I believe a monetary donation of any kind gets you access to the video to watch from tomorrow until February 19th. And then there is a second half to this where they are going to be having a panel is going to be speaking and unveil a series of training and resources leading up to possible actions. So if you're interested in doing that, make sure to check that out. And then tomorrow, starting at noon, there's going to be a Stop Line 3 caravan. So what they're going to do is they're going to gather at Palisade and decorate cars. And once everybody's decked out, they're going to follow all road rules as they disrupt the path of destruction on the pipeline route. So the whole point of this is to get Enbridge, Governor Walz, and President Biden to take more notice of us. Live updates, live stream, and live tweeting are going to be provided on the Take Action Minnesota Facebook page for those who can't make it to the car caravan. And Native Roots Radio will most likely share those updates as well throughout the day tomorrow, so you can tune in either place. So that's something that I might try to go to tomorrow. So you guys might be able to see me tuning in on Native Roots Radio Live for what's happening with that caravan as well. So definitely stay tuned.
Wear your snow pants.
Yeah.
Wear my snow pants. Cold. It's going to be cold tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And speaking of that, just thinking of the water protectors up there and the water warriors, it's just it's going to be really cold.
So, somebody posted the next few days weather in Bemidji and the temperatures are just astonishing.
So. Yeah. Prayers up. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So do you got another quick one, Ogama?
Yeah, so I do have another quick one. This one is in Wisconsin. So the Wisconsin Republican-controlled legislator actually repealed today their Democratic governor's mask mandate.
Yeah.
So that's kind of bad news for Wisconsin. And that leads me into just one more thing I want to touch on. The Guardian released an article today about COVID-19 numbers for Native Americans, and they said that COVID is killing Native Americans at a faster rate than any other community in the United States. American Indians and Alaska Natives are dying at almost twice the rate of white Americans, and that analysis was done by APM Research Lab and shared with The Guardian. So nationwide, one in every 475 Native Americans has died from COVID, compared to one in every 825 white Americans and one in every 645 Black Americans. So we are really seeing a death toll that is definitely hitting Native communities harder. And that's even going to be higher in areas, you know, like New Mexico and Arizona, where they've been hit really hard with the coronavirus. So while you're praying for the water protectors, make sure to pray for our elders and relatives as we go through this COVID-19 pandemic.
Hey, Peeny Gigi, thank you so much. And as Sasha just messaged me, I kind of knew this too, but it makes it real that Sasha sent it to me. As an hour later, the governor reinstated the mask. So they're going to go back and forth and back and forth, but that's that's really interesting. Up next, Robert Lilligren, Peeny Gigi Ogama. that you're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and we'll be right back.
Aneen, I'm Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan, and you are listening to Native Roots Radio.
We are a Lusa Nation.
Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade.
And this portion of the show is brought to you by MN350, a grassroots organization fighting for climate justice.
Well, Wendy, what day is it?
Today is Thursday.
I know you're retired, so I got to ask you what day it is. Believe and what does that
me,
mean?
I forget a lot of time. Today is Robert Lilligren's day.
That's right. It's awesome. And welcome, Robert Pinigigi, for being on. And Wendy's got a whole bio for you. I'm going to make her read it because she took mine. Go ahead, Wendy.
Serious.
Well, Robert's with Native American Community Development Institute, NATCI, and we're always pleased to have Robert on Thursdays, and we can talk local, national, and whatever we can, because Robert's in the know, and he's glued to those Zoom meetings 24/7 all over the world.
That part's true, Robert. Hi, Wendy. Bonjour, Nadine Magana. Thanks for having me. Yeah. It's always better. Yeah, that Zoom part is true. I am 24/7 Zoom these days.
Yeah. So thanks for coming on. And I'm wondering if we can get a little catch up on a few things, like that project that you've been talking about along the river of Minneapolis and St. Paul.
Yeah, thanks. And, you know, it's more than just that project. You know, it's just in a number of roles that I play in the community, conversations I'm in. It's about a lot of projects that are going on along the river, both in Minneapolis and St. Paul. They're really fascinating. The one I'm most involved in my day job at Native American Community Development Institute has to do with Lock and Dam at what we now call St. Anthony Falls, which is right by Nicollet Island. And there used to be an island there called, we call now called Spirit Island. And it's this real cluster of eminently sacred sites for the Dakota people that were completely destroyed and desecrated through colonization and industrialization. Yep. But if you just go a little downriver, there's a proposed project at the Bedote, where the Mississippi and the Minnesota rivers meet, that could do further damage and desecration. And then even a little further downriver, in St. Paul, on the Mississippi side, there's projects. There's a Wakan Tipi project, which is this incredible project at the Lower Palin Creek Reserve. And then just up the bluffs over some burial mounds that have been completely desecrated. And there's some effort to kind of redesign and sort of stop the desecration, and how can that go forward. And for Minneapolis, if you just go a little upriver, there's the Upper Harbor Terminal right on the river, super industrialized. And so it's just, you know, it's really interesting to see how these sites that were so sacred to the Dakota people were so desecrated by colonization. And, you know, in a lot of cases, what made them important, I think, to the first people that were here are what made them sort of advantageous to Minneapolis and St. Paul, which are cities that essentially grew up around extraction of resources from the native lands. And, you know, I talked about the Lower Palin Creek Project in St. Paul, the Wakan Tipi Project, you know, the divine dwelling, you know, Wakan Tipi, God's house, I guess. I'm not a Dakota linguist. But, you know, right there's all this major regional sewage infrastructure that, you know, literally stinks up and dumps human waste on God's house. You know,
Robert, do you realize that, well, that's Maggie Lorenz's group over there.
Right,
There's two things that I've learned over the years about that area, that at one time there were hundreds of mounds there.
Sure.
And the cave is a birthing cave that people from all over and all different tribes came. And it's great that what they're doing there, and it's amazing we go there and we see eagles and things. And, you know, we just got to stay on top of it. But I'm so glad you're bringing that up.
Yeah, no, and Maggie Lorenz, a Dakota woman, is just doing incredible work in kind of working within the system to try to get that project moving forward. And one of the hats I wear here in the Twin Cities is I serve on our regional government, the Metropolitan Council, the Met Council. I'm the first tribal citizen to ever serve on that body in its 50-year history. And so the Met Council operates that regional wastewater system. So that's a lot of Met Council infrastructure that needs to be considered as Maggie and the Waukon Teepee Lower Failing Creek Group move forward with their project. And so I've been in some really interesting conversations around that, and I'm trying to do the best I can from the inside. But the mounds just above the bluff there, I mean, you know, these are, you know, this is where the state gets its name, you know, the Minnesota, and these chalk cliffs, you know, and it's such an important site and so destroyed. And it just having this seat at these tables, it's becoming more and more interesting to me how much these meant in colonization. You know, the desecration and destruction of these sacred sites. That's you know, that's how you defeat a people.
Yeah,
you know?
we were fighting. We're going for a splash pad there in the park, and it was just like, "Are you kidding me?" And there's one thing I found out, Robert and Wendy, which really freaked me out, is that there's an underwater creek that goes from there all the way to Lake Phelan, and I had no idea.
Right, and there's an outlet. Excuse me. At the Waukon Teepee, that's the cave, right? Water is flowing out of that cave, and it's so clear. The last time I was down there, local people were harvesting cress, watercress, from the cave or from the mouth of the cave. And I didn't know, but I learned that watercress will only grow in the purest of water. And so that was a place where it grows naturally, and people go down and harvest it there. And again, just a few feet away is the largest sewage tunnel in our entire regional system. You know, there's a sort of an emergency release place, a sewage transfer station, all right there around this very, very sacred site.
Well, we have a lot of things coming up, too, and I know you got your ear on the track, so to speak, but, you know, we have this trial coming up. What have you heard with preparation or anything that's going on in Minneapolis? And we had so many things happen from outside forces when the murder did happen.
Right, so George Floyd's murder Memorial Day, and then the trials of the officers are coming up, and Derek Chauvin, the officer, was kneeling on George Floyd's neck. His trial starts March 8th, and there's a lot of talk at the state capitol just across the river. Governor Waltz is asking for an additional $35 million to be directed towards safety and security efforts. The state commissioner of public safety is engaging the local communities in planning. I mean, things blew up, you know, and righteously so. And, you know, in the protests, the destruction was a different thing. And a lot, like you said, there were outside interests from outside Minneapolis, interests from all across the country of people who just wanted to disrupt and cause chaos. And so nobody really knows what's going to happen when the trial starts, when the verdicts are announced. And so at the community level, we're being engaged by the city. I think you remember when the civil unrest started after George Floyd was murdered, our Native folks stepped up, and American Indian Movement AIM Patrol, the Little Earth Residents here in Minneapolis, we had the protectors. They just stepped up. They were organized. They protected our people and our assets and our non-Native neighbors and their assets. And there was very little policing needed in the Native community here because the community stepped up and took care of things. And so we have to learn, is that the expectation, you know, if there's civil unrest surrounding the trials, you know, what's the reciprocation? You know, what comes to the community for stepping up and really assuming this role like we did during the last civil unrest, where we took responsibility for our own community safety and the public sector didn't really have the resources or ability to do it?
Wow, you are absolutely right. And wow, it seems so long ago, but also not that long ago, right?
Right, right, yeah. It wasn't that long ago. Those of us that live, you know, we had National Guard actions right out in front of our house, you know. It was really intense, triggering, you know.
Yeah, I'm surprised that they are able to find a jury which is impartial, since it's such national news and it's, you know, I don't
right.
know. Yeah.
I would say it's international news.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Minneapolis is now internationally famous for this very despicable act.
Mm-hmm. Right, and we, you know, not to get too far in it because we're close to a break, but, you know, we're a mile and a half in St. Paul. Was that right, Wendy, a mile and a half? You figured
yeah,
it out?
Yeah, less than a mile and a half from McGeezy,
right.
where
sure.
that happened, and then... we're like a mile from each bridge, the Ford Parkway Bridge and the Lake Street Bridge. And that night, there were helicopters going back and forth all night long because they were trying to block the bridges so that people weren't going back and forth. So it was really, it was a very scary time.
And not only that, it was scary because we had people with driving around our neighborhood a mile and a half away from the hot zone with no license plates and cruising our neighborhood. And we lost a few gas stations and some businesses.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And, you know, you wouldn't think that because we were so far away.
Yeah.
Right. And they weren't, the point being, they weren't people from this community
exactly.
that were creating that kind of destruction.
Mm-hmm.
We weren't burning our own neighborhoods down. People were coming into the neighborhoods and burning them down.
Exactly.
It was intense.
Exactly. Well, we're here with Robert Lilligren, Wendy and I, Wendy Pilot and Robert Pilot. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and we're going to come back with Robert and maybe talk a little COVID and some other things. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake.
Hi, this is Representative Sharice Davids from Kansas. I'm Ho-Chunk, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
We are a Lusa Nation.
Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Mukunja Hade.
And we want to thank everyone who gives to our Patreon, which is Native Roots Radio Network Patreon. And we have people who give us money every month so that we could stay on the air and pay the bills and stay afloat. So we want to just thank everybody with our full hearts.
Yes, Pini Gigi.
Yeah,
yes,
Pini
thank
Gigi.
You so much. Hey, we're here with Robert Lilligren, and Robert's with NADCI, Native American Community Development Institute. And we're always excited to have Robert on because we have a good conversation, and then we have a few yucks, and we talk about the 70s and how everyone missed out on the 70s. And
right. So I wish I could remember what we did in the 70s.
Right. Isn't
it's
that
all
the,
a blur.
Like, if you really were in the 70s, you don't remember the 70s.
Right.
Isn't that how the scene goes?
If you did them right.
Right. That's right. And the 80s weren't good to me either because I had, like, a mini mullet. I look at pictures and... But I did sober up in 84, so the first 4 years were a little hit touch and go. But I regress. Welcome back, and why don't we talk? Why don't we switch gears a little bit here and talk a little bit? Ogama mentioned this in her news, but talk a little bit about COVID and what's happening, because there's some ridiculous numbers that have just come out.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's kind of grim, and you know, not surprisingly, I think to us and to your listeners, that Native Americans are dying at the most rapid rate of any group here in this country. And right now, one in every 475 Native Americans have died from COVID here in this country. One out of 475.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that compares to one out of 825 white Americans, and even one out of 645 black Americans. And so Native American deaths are up 35% just from between December 2020 and January 2021. And so this is, you know, you think of the long-term cultural impacts, you know, losing one elder to COVID, and think of all the knowledge, wisdom, culture, ceremony that passes with that one person. You know, that's a huge impact. And, you know, so losing even, say, 1% of Native Americans, that's like the country losing 3 million people.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's so disproportionate.
It is very disproportionate. And, you know, Native American people have a harder time getting good health care. They have more comorbidities, et cetera. And it's really, really sad.
It's really sad. And, you know, there are some sort of bright spots. A lot of tribes and urban Indian health services have been much more effective in their rollout. And, you know, so here what I've been telling people, you know, is to get on as many lists as you can. You know, so I was on the list at our Indian Health Board clinic here in Minneapolis, and they get to the point where they're going to need to use up either vaccinations that are ready to expire or vaccinations that have been opened. And they just call through this list rapid fire. Can you be here, you know, by this time today? And so I was able, you know, without butting in front of anybody, you know, to get my shot. I got my first shot a couple weeks ago. I'll get my second one on February 19th.
Yes.
But the urban clinics here, there's two of them. You can get on the list there. My my tribe, White Earth, was down today doing shots for urban members 45 and over. So you can
wow.
be on that list, you know, and people just got to get it. We're losing so many people. Mm-hmm. And the more people that are vaccinated, the better for everybody, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, Dr. Stately was on Monday, and he was saying that they lowered their age to 55 because they looked at all of their patients, like they scrubbed their files, and they really, the patients that they had, even at 55, really did have other pre-existing conditions. So they felt that having all of those people vaccinated would be beneficial. So that's what they did.
Right, and so many Native folks do have a number of pre-existing conditions. And Dr. Stately and at the Native American Community Clinic, mm-hmm. the other Native clinic here in Minneapolis, has just been doing incredible work. And I work kind of closely with them on responses to our relatives who are sleeping outside.
Yeah.
And his passion is providing even basic health services to people, wound dressing and things like that. But he's working with other partners on a vaccination strategy for these very hard people to reach, very hard population to engage, to do follow-up, and they are getting down there in the nitty-gritty and doing that. He was telling me, I was in a meeting with him today, Dr. Anthony Stately of the Native American Community Clinic, and he was telling me about being on the show and, you know, sort of the work he's doing to raise the profile of their work.
Yeah.
They're in the Capitol campaign, you know, I'm on their Capitol Campaign Committee. That's where I saw him today.
Well, we're totally blessed to have you and a doctor on. And it's just a full lineup here now on Native Roots Radio. And really, you know, we have Bob Blake on Wednesdays talking solar.
Very cool.
State Senator Mary Kunish. I always say hi.
Right.
And yourself. And then Tuesday we do a little Nancy Boley up in the deep north talking to politicians and people that are moving and shaking and what's happening up there in the deep north. With the pipelines and stuff. So we're really blessed to have a really robust
diverse type
guests.
Of guests.
Yeah,
yeah, we're and really lucky.
So I'm going to get that T-shirt to you, I swear. The resist one.
Oh, yeah, I'll wear it. As soon as you get it to me, I'll wear it.
All right.
You know, I was saying to Robert tonight with the cold temperatures coming out, you know, I feed the animals out there, and I even built a little heated shelter for whichever animal wanted to go into it. And I said to him, you know, I feel so bad for our unsheltered relatives and the people out there who don't have a home right now with these really cold temperatures moving in, so...
Yeah, that's specific. And we have a weekly meeting here under sort of the umbrella of our group, Metropolitan Urban Indian Directors, but it's community people, a lot of people doing outreach to our relatives sleeping outside, service providers, public sector agency people. These have been weekly meetings going on for about a year and a half now, just trying to better coordinate support for our relatives. And this issue of this weekend's cold was a big topic this week when we met, and so many of the spaces, warming spaces here in the city, don't open up until the temperatures are really low, brutally, like the 10, 20 below. And today it's going to be brutal, or this week it's going to be brutal enough, but there aren't even adequate warming spaces necessarily. So getting the information out to our relatives where they can go, what is open, so you don't freeze to death this weekend.
So we have a few contests coming up in a couple of years. What's happening in Minneapolis campaign-wise? Do you know anything stirring up?
Elections. I wasn't sure what you meant by contest. I was thinking of yours. I know you have a hot one going right now. But the so this is a municipal election year in Minneapolis. So our mayor, our city council are all up for re-election. There's going to be a whole slew of ballot initiatives around public safety, police, you know, our charter, which is like the city's constitution, charter changes. So municipal elections don't attract quite the resources and attention as the big national elections, federal elections. Excuse me. But in my world, they're a big deal, and I'm working on a couple of different campaigns as a volunteer and kind of in the thick of it.
Well, maybe what we can do is one Thursday share one of the segments with one of your candidates, and maybe we can hand it over to you, and you can interview one of the candidates when we get close to that.
While we We'll take you up in that offer. We have a Native sister that's running for one of the city council seats. We have an interesting political landscape here at the municipal level in Minneapolis. And if folks don't know, I served on the Minneapolis City Council for 12 years from 2002 to 2014 as a first tribal citizen on the city council.
Yeah, and you have the experience, and I think we've been talking about, especially after this last election, how important every 2 years is and how we can really amplify and support and also remind politicians that came for our support, you know, that, hey, we helped you get in office.
Hold them accountable.
Right.
Well, and we're our organization, NACTI, has an ongoing voter engagement process called Make Voting a Tradition. And one of the things we don't have is disaggregated data about our community here and their political involvement. And so Make Voting a Tradition is funded and now starting an effort to start building out a Native voter file, Native specific. And so it was like, well, if you don't have our data, we'll just go get it ourselves. And we'll go, you know, assemble it ourselves. And so it's kind of a big deal. It's going to start very local with the Little Earth community, but then build out hopefully until we're doing it statewide.
Yeah, it's exciting because a part of our show on Tuesdays is that's what Nancy does, is she, for her two segments, we'll both interview a guest. And so that would be exciting to really amplify the people you're working with in Minneapolis and across the state.
Cool, would love to.
Yeah, so Wendy, any more questions or to Robert here?
No, I was just talking to you, Robert, here about the Mississippi River. Robert and I are very familiar with the river. We've been on the river boating for many, many years. So when you were mentioning those places, you know, we could picture it in our minds. And then where the Mississippi River and the Minnesota River meet, you call it Bidote.
Water merging, or two waters merging.
Oh, is that what that means?
Yeah.
And then, but it's called Pike Island. That's the people who are on the river and who go, you know, park their boat there, call it Pike Island.
The colonizers.
That's what I was saying. I know you couldn't hear me. But I will say, and right there, that, you know, the site below Fort Snelling, you know, another sacred site that was desecrated, that was the site of a concentration camp, right, after the 1862 war. People, women and children, a lot of, were forced marched. There was hundreds and hundreds of deaths right there. Again, very sacred land.
Yeah.
that through colonization has been hideously desecrated.
Right, exactly. And I think there's tours and things like that going on. Robert, thank you so much. Peenie, so much for stopping.
Yeah, I mean, what? Thanks for having me.
These two segments go really, really fast.
And I
we didn't even get a chance to reminisce about high school again. So we'll do that maybe next week. Peenie for being on. And hey, you're listening to Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade. Up next, Wendy with our sacred animals.
This is Winona the Duke of Honor the Earth, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio. I'm Awake.
We are Alusa Nation.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade. Hey, and I just want to say that all things are our relatives, and what we do to everything we do to ourselves, all is one, Black Elk. I want to introduce my awesome and beautiful wife, Wendy Pilot, and she's an animal advocate for many years, and this is her segment about sacred animals, and it's always compelling, and you do so much research. I was just talking to you before the show, and I said, wow, who works the least on these shows? I know Ogama's working.
Ogama prepares, our guests prepare, I prepare. Robert, you don't do so much preparing.
I'm a natural, I hope.
It is. You are a natural.
Yeah.
My name is Hanaji Hihani, and that means cares for them, and I was given that name by my Dega, so always thank you, Curtis, for that name. You know, we're always talking about the pipeline and Line 3 and how it is raping the earth and causing problems with the environment and the wildlife. And I found this article in High Country News, and it's dated February 3rd, 2021, and it's written by Ariana Brocious. And I wanted to read a couple of excerpts from it. After months of border wall construction, a look at the damage done as President Biden takes the helm. Conservation groups take stock of the border wall's environmental impacts. In the last year and a half, crews have raced to complete the border wall promised by former President Donald Trump. By the time his term ended, many of the construction projects across Arizona's borderlands were complete. As President Joe Biden takes office, environmental groups are taking stock of the environmental destruction caused by the wall as they make a case for restoration. Much of Arizona's international border with Mexico is made up of public lands, places set aside by the federal government for special protection because of their unique ecological value, such as the San Bernardino National Wildlife Refuges, among so many others. So when the Trump administration released its first plans for the new border wall construction in Arizona in May 2019, environmentalists were horrified to see that nearly all the proposed wall segments were on those public lands. Quote, the administration really started to push out into remote, rugged terrain on public land all across the borderline in Arizona, where the ecological value of those places is so much higher that the damage done by the construction is much more egregious, says Randy Seragaglio. He's the Southwest conservation advocate with the Center for Biological Diversity. For months now, construction crews have been dynamiting, drilling, pumping, excavating, and clearing public land in places like Guadalupe Canyon in far eastern Arizona. And in far eastern Arizona, simply building roads to bring the construction equipment involved blasting mountainsides and sending the rubble down to clog drainages. Previously, wide open landscapes where wildlife and water could move freely have been severed by the huge steel barrier. the Saran Desert's iconic, and I'm going to, I don't know how to say this, it's saguaros. They were protected by law. And these are those big giant cactus that grow over 60 feet and their branches look like candelabras. Well, they're protected by law and they've been found lying in heaps next to the construction sites. This is damage that will never be mitigated, Sarigaglio said. This is permanent. Under the Trump administration, contractors have replaced barbed wire or waist-high barriers with 30-foot-high steel beams, 6 inches wide and only 4-inch gap in between. Nothing larger than a cottontail rabbit could pass through there, says Mild Traffigan, Borderlands Program Coordinator with the Wildlands Network. So the common wildlife you see along the border, such as javelinas, which are kind of like pig-like animals, deer, mountain lions, bobcats, bighorn sheep, those are going to be completely impeded by this border wall. Traffigan's organization works closely with the ranches and ranchers in Mexico that prioritize wildlife protection and cross-border mitigation corridors. He said their game cameras, used to capture images of hundreds of animals per month traveling the drainages near San Bernardino National Wildlife Refuge, but the last few times I've been down there, those numbers have just plummeted, he said. By November, that wall was complete. Quote, the river is a lifeline for hundreds and hundreds of thousands of species. Millions of migratory birds use it as a flyaway every year, Sarigaglio said. And yet, they have constructed a wall right across the riverbed that will almost certainly act as a dam and completely disrupt the normal ecological functioning of that river. The long-term impacts of severing wildlife corridors are also unknown, he said. We have walled off 75% of the continent from the Rio Grande to the Pacific Ocean, he said. By doing so, we're conducting an uncontrolled ecological experiment that is going to potentially alter the evolutionary history of North America for decades to come if these walls remain intact. We don't really have the baseline science to be able to determine what all the impacts are going to be because all the environmental laws that would have required that kind of analysis were waived, he said. Many environmental groups have begun to make their case to the Biden administration, suggesting ways to mitigate the impacts of the wall or even remove sections of it. But because of those baseline studies never happened, many are worried we'll never know exactly what was lost in the rush to build it. So again, here we go with the wall. There's a wall, and it's going to be impacting millions of different species and animals and water life, all because this wall had to be built, and there were no previous scientific studies done to see how it would impact this area.
Of course not.
Hopefully Biden will be able to look at some of the science and he will hopefully some of the wall can be taken down so we're not losing species that live there. Hopefully it'll be able to be fixed in some way, but some of the damage that is already done is permanent.
Sounds reasonable. The last 4 years, I don't even talk about, you know, and he has a lot to undo. And like we were talking about earlier too with Robert, is that we need to stay on our politicians.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
we really do. We need to stay on our politicians and tell them what we care about.
You know, and so many things changed with the lack, or I should say the minority of people voting, and things got changed, and we won by more than 8 million votes, and we have to remember that we won, and that, you know, the bipartisan was nowhere to be seen in probably in the last 6 years, because mm-hmm. The Senate, the National Senate, was a Republican. So, again, and then we have to push our liberal friends, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we always have to talk politics and things like that, right?
We always talk politics, absolutely. So everybody, if you care about something, let your legislators and representatives know and sign a petition.
Yeah, great show, Wendy. Hey, I would like to end with these thoughts. If you're listening to this show, you are the resistance. From Chief Plenty Coops, the ground on which we stand on is sacred ground. It is the blood of our ancestors. We need to resist, divest, join a group, run for office. You've been listening to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and I've been your host, Robert Pilot. Peeny Gigi to Robert Lilligren, Wendy Pilot, Ogama, and myself. If you're listening to the show, you are the resistance. We're still here. We are the seventh generation.
Free Leonard Peltier.